Do you want to learn how to invest, or are you an entrepreneur and want to build companies in the regenerative food and agriculture space? Or do you work in big ag and big food and want to really move the needle? We have developed a new video course for you. Find out more on investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/course or in the show notes description below.
Why did the Chief Operating Officer of Kiss the Ground and the Chief Innovation Officer at Howgood join forces to update the regenerative agriculture industry map? After Ethan Soloviev made the first version at the end of 2020, a lot has happened, and so it's time to check in and see where we're at and what lies ahead. Should we celebrate the big brands and massive food companies moving into the space, or should we be really, really worried? And what makes these two veterans of the regenerative movement cautiously optimistic?
This is the Investing in Regenerative Agriculture and Food podcast, Investing as if the Planet Mattered, where we talk to the pioneers in the regenerative food and agriculture space to learn more on how to put our money to work to regenerate soil, people, local communities, and ecosystems while making an appropriate and fair return. Why my focus on soil and regeneration? Because so many of the pressing issues we face today have their roots in how we treat our land and our sea, grow our food, what we eat, wear and consume. And it's time that we as investors, big and small, and consumers start paying much more attention to the dirt/soil underneath our feet. To make it easy for fans to support our work, we launched our membership community, and so many of you have joined us as a member. Thank you. If our work created value for you, and if you have the means, and only if you have the means, consider joining us. Find out more on gumroad.com/investinginregenag. That is gumroad.com/investinginregenag. Or find the link below.
Welcome to another episode. Today we have a friend of the podcast back on the show and a new face. First of all, welcome back, Ethan. It's been, I checked, November 2020 since we recorded last, which was a very different time and place. And now you're back on the show to discuss a lot of things, but definitely also the regenerative agriculture industry map. And you are doing that together with Karen Rodriguez, the Chief Operating Officer at Kiss the Ground, which if you don't know, go to the website and find out. Not now, but like just after. But very warm welcome to the podcast for the first time. I hope it's not going to be the last. And please, a question I always like to ask, I asked Ethan quite a few years ago, but not to you yet, Karen, what brings you to soil and regeneration? And what brings you to work in this fascinating, but definitely not the easiest career path ever?
That's a good way to put it. I would say that I always had a connection with the natural world. And honestly, even today, I'm 40 years old, and it's still the only thing that makes sense to me about being alive. There's just a divine design that I see that was there well before I came here and will be here well after I'm here. And then I'm a part of it, right, by being birthed and then by having a death process at some point. And so I was always connected to it, you know, in my heart. But it wasn't till I was about 28 that I really started to see. I worked in food and restaurants for a long time, and I was very lucky. I got to work for amazing chefs who really, really taught me snout to tail philosophy, or the importance of organic food, or really that you can follow the trail of a plate that goes in front of you, where it came from, what the family did in order to cultivate the food a certain way. It was my favorite thing to do, was to give you a plate of food and then explain like what happened with those tomatoes, or what happened with that, the grapes and the wine and the families that were in charge of these and the history of the fooding. And it wasn't until I was 28 that a friend of mine, Ryland Engelhart, went to New Zealand, and he went to speak about veganism at a conference in New Zealand. And he went into a panel called "Can Humans Sustain Life on Planet Earth?" And there were, I believe it was like 6 soil scientists speaking, and 5 of them were like, "It's over, doom and gloom. Like, we can't sustain anymore. It's all done." Mind you, this was like 9 years ago. And then one of them, Graham Sate, spoke about a loophole in the system, is what he called it. And saying that if we treated soil the way that it's naturally designed, it draws carbon out of the atmosphere, it stores it in the ground, and we can regenerate the earth, we can regenerate water systems, we can regenerate our health. And it was just an answer to many, many, many things. And so when Ryland came home and shared with everybody, I very clearly remember the moment he told me. It was like this matrix of my being kind of opened up into something that I was like, wait, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, I know I went to kindergarten, but how come I'm an adult human who works in food and had not made the connection, did not follow that thread all the way back to the earth and the earth itself? And I think that was it for us. It was just like, if this is possible, then we're going to give our lives to this, because there's nothing else we need to work on than this. So that's how I got to soil. And what brings me into this work is that, yeah, it's possible. It's possible, and it exists, and it's existed for a long time, and it's going to exist for a long time. If we can tap into the essence of regeneration, we are going to have a healthier humanity in many, many ways, and that many things can be regenerated if we can learn about being in that flow.
And what made you, because pre-recording, Ethan mentioned, because Ethan has published the first Regen Ag industry or regenerative agriculture industry map at the end of 2020, sorry. And you reached out to him and said, we need to update this, or this deserves an update. And I am imagining there are 6 trillion other things on your to-do list. So why this one?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, when you're early to something, or what feels early, when you're talking about something in the world and no one knows what you're talking about, you don't realize how early you are, because you're in it and you're like, wait, everybody needs to know this. And I remember talking to a few people when we started, a few people in government, a few people in different sectors that were like, whoa, you guys are way ahead of your time. And I remember that when I used to read Ethan's writing, especially on Continuum, and especially just how he started to see the formation of this, I just remember being not only really moved, but also wowed, because he was willing to go in deep with like companies and brands, right? Which are like, in my world, the way that I saw the world, it felt in my youth like brands and companies were maybe the most like contributing in ways that may not always be healthy for the planet. And so
you're saying it very diplomatic.
Tried really hard on that one.
They seem evil.
And
you could just say it.
And so because of that, no, but the truth is, like, there has to be a respect here, right? There has to be a respect in this moment.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's true. I'm just saying that might have been your image as 20-year-old or 16
or
25.
Exactly.
Or
exactly. Yeah, it was. And so
big corporates, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, take. And so when I saw that he was willing to get in the room or get in the conversation with these people with this much power in a society or in the world, I thought it was brilliant. And I remember the map itself sat as my desktop. I put it as my desktop screensaver for like a year and a half, because I was like, this is very important. Like, there's a movement starting and it's going somewhere. And it makes me think of like a school of fish, or birds, right, that fly together. If they leave a formation, they don't get as far, or some of them get hurt. And so I just thought we have to keep an eye on all of this, because at some point, if regeneration is going to take everybody, then this is part of everybody, you know? And so when after COVID happened and the world sort of seemed to I don't know. There was lots. I felt like, for me, it felt like a lot of opportunity, right? Like I felt like, all right, we have an opportunity here to build and come together in a different way and think differently and kind of work differently. And I'm very clear, we have a lot of problems with the unknown, and we have a lot of problems with processing grief, and we don't know how to do it. And so what's the opportunity here? And for me, I just saw so clearly like that this map, and that actually writing an open letter to brands and saying, hey, we know you're all coming, you're here now. This is a different movement than it was 10 years ago, like when nobody knew what we were talking about. Everybody now that's gonna come into this game, that map sort of foresaw that already. And so I was like, hey, Ethan, what are you doing? do you want to do this map? Because I thought there was a value to bring it to date, for sure. And he was open to it. So we did it.
Yeah, let's bring you into the conversation, Ethan. Welcome back, first of all. And what also with a gazillion things on your to-do list, the map, I don't think, was the first. Why dedicate time to it to update, to keep it updated or sort of relaunch? I think there's some new work in it. Of course, there's some methodology that changed. And what made you revisit that, let's say, 2 years after the first one came out, which I will link below, obviously, and the conversation we had as well about that.
Great. Yeah, thanks. So glad to be back and very excited to be here with Karen. I mean, really, the map would not have happened had Karen not reached out and said, hey, can we refresh this? This is like, it's still moving. It's still growing. It's been COVID for years, and yet it continues to grow. How much is it growing? Did it actually slow down? And so it was amazing. By the end of it, we got to go back and look at some of the predictions. I made those predictions, 2019, it was December. I was like, well, who knows? I'm just going to make up some numbers and maybe we'll put 350 organizations by 2022. And then we did the numbers. It's almost 550 organizations. So we actually underpredicted how fast it would grow. And I think Karen had that sense, had that intuitive sense from running and growing Kiss the Ground and, seeing what she was seeing. Like she knew it was growing in that way, but it took her reaching out to be like, let's dig in. Let's really get the data. Let's check it out to show that. And then with it, we're going to have yet, another magnet, another beautiful flower that's sort of opening up, and it smells good and there's nectar inside and it will call others to it. And that's exactly what happened, right? And so the Regenerate Journal, where it was, the early version of this was published, even the visual, the imagery of it, I never even thought about this, Karen, until this moment, but it was very flowering. It was this very beautiful, much, my early version was like a shitty graphical, like data geeks version of bar charts, right? And you and the team made it into this beautiful graphic that sort of showed the growth and the expansion over time. And I think we really are in that sort of flowering of regenerative agriculture as a movement. We're not all the way to the fruit yet, right? It's like the flowers still open, yeah. And a bunch of the flowers are going to not get pollinated and wither and die in the next couple of years, but there will be some fruit. It's already started, but more and more will come. And so I think that's just a great way to think about where we are right now in the movement.
Yeah. And I'll just add that I started to talk about it, but I didn't finish it in the sentence I just said, but it's like, we were like ahead of something that republishing now. Even in our work, when I republish anything, there are so many people that haven't heard of it that it's new for them. And I think that having that moment again, I think for all of our work, it's really lucky that we get to do that because there's a bigger audience now.
And what do you see as the main, I mean, the I'm not saying the pie has become bigger, but like you mentioned, this 500 plus organizations that explicitly mention regenerative agriculture. Of course, mentioning is one thing, but doing that explicitly, if you say very clearly on the blog post on how good, like that says something, especially for large organizations. They think about these things before they say something. What do you see is the main? What was the main surprise for both of you? You can take both can take the question one of you. The main surprise when you looked at the data and when you looked at how the industry has grown or morphed or changed over the last, let's say, 2 years, because this is until the end of 2022.
Karen, you want to start?
I think that for me, it wasn't so much a surprise, to be honest, because so many hundreds of people have been working on this now for a while. But it felt so nice to see the fruits of the labor and say, like, wow, when, you know, the beginning of the map, if you look at the beginning of the map, there's like 10 companies. And then to see a fulfillment and go beyond what we thought, you know, like I said, when we started this work, I mean, I don't even know if we knew exactly what, you know, I know we said yes to regeneration, but I don't think we got the magnitude of it. And I think when I saw the map brought to date, it just felt like, yeah, this is massive. This is massive and the potential is massive. And it just felt really good to experience that after years of, you know, like in the beginning, especially, I remember we, you know, Ethan and I, we always go to Expo West, which is a food conference for all the brands that are doing healthy food, quote unquote. And in the beginning, people
in the U.S. for anybody listening
in the U.S. in the U.S. Would just look at us and they would look at us like we were, you know, they were like, "You're so cute. This is sweet, but you know what you're talking about is insane." You know, and now to be here and see it all coming, it's a pretty nice feeling, because I think, like I said, hundreds of people work on this. We have so many amazing colleagues that are brilliant humans, and I think we all moved this forward, and I feel really happy to be able to see it tangibly becoming, you know.
And what about you?
Yeah, and I think a couple things that were surprising for me. One, as I mentioned, I undershot how fast it would grow. Like, I predicted 350, we're at 550 at the end of it. And it's even further now. I've been keeping a little closer track, and it's continuing to grow. And I think, Karen, you were speaking to there, that thing that it was like, it was a little slow at the beginning. And that, for better or worse, is some of the pattern of exponential growth. It starts to grow, it feels slow. And then all of a sudden, boom, it's exploding. And that's what we're seeing. This is that, like, you know, the graph is a classic hockey stick graph. And I don't actually see signs of it slowing down in 2023 with everything that's happening in the world, with COP28 coming up in the UAE. And there's been an awareness that was growing from the last climate COP in, first in Glasgow, then in Egypt, where like food is becoming a bigger and bigger part of it. People are going, oh, agriculture is not just a problem. Agriculture could be the solution. In fact, of all the different industries, it's the only thing that can net sequester carbon. It's the only thing that really has a chance of enhancing biodiversity and lifting up human livelihoods at the same time. So I think there's increasing focus on regenerative agriculture. Another thing that was surprising, I think, you know, I made an estimate of something like $50 million in revenue of companies that had, you know, said early on they were working on regenerative agriculture. I think I was a little low on that. I think it was still, you know, by that point, it might have been maybe 50 billion, I think, would have been a little closer. You look at companies like General Mills, who even in 2019 had committed to regenerative agriculture. That's a multi-billion dollar global company, even then. But now when I calculate, you know, I went through all the companies and I looked at the different organizations, you know, that are promoting it on a larger coalition scale, which I want to speak a little bit more about, the Sustainable Markets Initiative, the One Planet Business for Biodiversity, right? These large groups. If you look at all the companies across all of them that are working on regenerative agriculture, there's over $1 trillion in revenue annually of companies that are committing to, in some way, shape, or form, work on regenerative agriculture. So that's explosive. And it also sort of has something to do with why we're seeing this growth, right? There was that investment, CPGs, the number of CPGs have grown by, you know, 3.8x, almost 4x, even in the last 3 years. And with that comes increasing awareness from consumers. So I think just the speed and scale at which this little seed that Karen and I and a few others were running around, you know, trying to plant again. And I think seed is a good little metaphor there, because It's not like we created it. Actually, we were fortunate enough to receive the seed from something much older, ancestral, and indigenous than ourselves. And yet we were the ones running around trying to get it back in some fertile soil and get it sprouting again.
And then what are the, I'm not saying dangers, but what are the not so pretty, or what are the risks here? Because of course, hear trillions. What's the downside, or what should we absolutely be careful with? Because I can come up with a few, but what are your takes?
Well,
on that?
Yeah, and even with Ethan's seed metaphor, it's like that's what it was. It's like we're running around trying to replant the seed, and I know, like, I'm an indigenous woman from Guatemala. I'm Mayan, so part of me is like I was never going to get out of this work because my ancestors have fought for the earth forever. So that seed metaphor really is like, you know, once you plant a seed, there is a relationship that has to be held with it. You can't just say we're regenerative as a company and then not live it or embody it. It's not going to take that way. So the risks, you know, there's many risks and it is a scary time. I would say, what I learned is that there was a time that I thought as soon as the big brands come, it's going to greenwash, right? Everyone's just going to start throwing the term around and they're not really going to know what it is and they're not really going to care. Then there was a time where I was like, well, there's not a consensus on the definition and there really can't be. It's very hard to get that because context is one of the main principles of regenerative agriculture. And context is everything. It's like the piece of land you are standing on is not the same in two places. So then I was like, okay, well, is the movement itself going to split? Like, are there going to be people that are going to go into deep regeneration and then groups of people who are going to splinter that? And then I thought, then I was like, maybe it's some miracle will happen and it'll just take and everybody will get it and it'll just be regenerative everywhere. And what I learned now in 10 years of doing this is that it's all of it. It's going to be all of it because that is how we are as humans. That is the humanity that we're in. So I think that the most important piece of this is that it's generational work. It's going to take a long time, just like it took a long time to disconnect from it. It's going to take a long time to connect to it. And then that the most important piece is staying in the conversation and continuing to have these talks because, some people will get it wrong right away. Some people will just try to use the words and terminology and they won't live it and they won't really create the right product. And some people will go all the way and really create new food systems.
And you're saying with everybody, sorry, Ethan, you're with everybody being scared for the greenwashing and it will just be downplayed, it would just be a word and a definition somewhere. Stay in the conversation and remember that this is a long-term generational dance we're doing and don't forget that. Is that fair advice for people that feel a bit discouraged at the moment with all the terms being thrown around and the commitments and not really followed through in many cases?
Ethan.
Or Karen. No, I was asking you, sorry.
Oh, sorry, you were asking
or
me.
Or Ethan, or both of you. Yeah. Is that a fair advice for people that feel discouraged and that felt in that, like in the different phases as you just mentioned as well?
Yeah, I would say, look, I'm going to be really honest. It's not a time to be discouraged. It's not a time to be discouraged. We can't go on like that. You know, I understand a lot of heavy things are happening on the planet and I understand that it, you know, things got intense for humans. You know, and we are living through a tough time and we are living through wild things and lots of change. But the discourage and the disempowerment, it's not our true essence. We are not a species that can thrive that way. We have to not be discouraged. We have to be empowered. We are stewards of the land. That is our nature. So we just have to reconnect to that. And so is it discouraging that there are brands that will just use the language, not meet the criteria, and really, really just try to package something and slap a label on it? Yes, that's a discouraging thing. But there are so many people trying to do the right thing right now that we can't just discount that as well. And so, yeah, I would say that I wouldn't want anyone to feel discouraged. It's a time to be empowered, that we have to give ourselves our empowerment and each other and say that, you know, we can do this. We can regenerate how we're eating and how we're fooding and how we're treating our planet, you know.
Yeah, and to layer onto that, it's not about us. Like, I'm not doing this work for myself, for my ego, so that I get something out of it. I'm putting my ego to work. I'm putting myself to work for the future. I'm putting it to work for my kids and my eventual grandkids. And look, if you get discouraged now, if you stop working now, it's going to be even worse for our kids, right? For the next generations. We're not going to experience the worst of climate change. Climate change disruption is going to get worse and worse and worse unless we make some really significant shifts right now. And so we need that empowerment that Karen's speaking to. We need that community of praxis, of coming together, thinking and working together so that we can make things not go as, you know, catastrophic as they could potentially go. And so for that reason and more, we have to keep seeding. And I think that's the other thing, right? If we take an ecosystem viewpoint on this, ecosystems don't do things in just one way. This is one of the reasons I've always been against a single, you know, unitive definition of regenerative agriculture, is because that's not how a tree thinks or works, right? A tree sends out, I'm looking out my window now at a hickory tree, shagbark hickory, this amazing tree here in the Northeast, what they now call the United States. Delicious nuts, like the sweetest little, they're like little mini pecans, same genus as pecans. And they're so sweet and they're so fat and protein rich. And the indigenous peoples here used to, and even still today, as they're starting to come back to their homeland here, have access to this nut and would use it in all these really innovative ways to create these broths and a hickory butter. And this hickory tree outside my window, like, it's going to drop thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of seeds throughout its, you know, many hundred years of life. And not all of the, many of those seeds will sprout, but only one, statistically speaking, only one or maybe two will end up at a tree the same size as this mother hickory is. And so we can have a diversity of things sprouting under the name of regenerative agriculture. And like Karen said, they're not all going to be, you know, the perfect true to form, as deep as maybe I hope and want them to. But there's going to be a lot out there. And rather than, I don't know, cutting down a tree over there because you don't like how it looks or you don't like how it's getting out there with its regenerative attempt, that's not actually the most useful approach. I think there are better ways to grow a community and grow the integrity of what we're trying to do, and also to evolve it over time as the world evolves and as the world pivots pretty hard towards looking at agriculture and regenerative agriculture as a solution to many of the crises, the sort of the poly crisis that we face right now.
And do you see that in your work with, sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. And I would add on to that, that the essence of regeneration itself is it's like a spiral. It's a continuum. So you go down that path and it's not somewhere to get to, and it's not going to stop. So if someone starts the path and starts to transition something in their ecosystem, that will create the energy of renewal over and over again. So it'll keep evolving by nature, by actual design. So I don't think that anyone that goes down this path is going to be able to be stuck in one place or one thread of this. It's actually something that keeps, it's a living, breathing essence, right? So good luck.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck trying to banalize this and make
yeah,
it. And
good luck.
You can't do it. There's too many of us who are holding something deeper. There's too much of a live, living ecosystem growing. There's too many people still connected to their ancestral, indigenous, regenerative ways. Like, you can't actually get that far without being moved, even if you just set out to extract value at the outset.
Exactly.
And do you see that attention, or do you see that within specifically Ethan, but also Karen, actually, in your work with larger companies and very structured organizations, let's say, could be large CPGs, could be anything, that maybe the people within are on their spiral, on the spiral and going basically continuing, but maybe they're in an organization that is definitely set up like a pyramid and not very flexible. And so do you see those tensions? I don't want to hear names, et cetera, but do you see that?
Sure.
Or do you also see the organizations maybe starting to, if they can, and we've seen some attempts maybe to do that, to be less of a pyramid and more like a continuum or a swirl?
I would say that there's a lot of good intention that I've seen of people coming down the path, but a misunderstanding of, like I said, that spiral essence. You know, they come in, they're poking around, like they want to know, they care about it. I see a lot of good. We're definitely not in the place where I can tell you like a case study. Like I couldn't tell you like what happened over years because it's just the beginning. But what I do see is that once people really learn about it more, once a company really gets into it and really learns, maybe takes one of our courses or something, the internal staff themselves start to ask more questions, and they start to ask questions within the organization itself. And that's been really beautiful to see. And yeah, I would say that it's not a hard tension in this moment per se, unless you're a very, very big company. But I would say that it's that people don't know what's coming. You know, it's like people don't know what they're saying yes to, really. Yeah.
Probably better.
Yes.
To a certain extent. And what about you, Ethan?
Yeah, I mean, they're getting drawn into that delicious, beautiful flower. They're excited about it. They don't quite know they want it. I think I see a lot of what Karen's saying. I don't see the hard tension, but I see lots of real differences inside of companies, right? We work with How Good Now, works with 5 of the 10 largest food companies in the world. And we see a lot of like individual champions or small teams that really get it. They've gone further on their journey. They've been on farms. They've been trying to figure out how to get regenerative supply into their system. They've been looking at the impact, you know, the impact factors, the carbon accounting. They've seen the new global biodiversity framework. They've seen the regulations coming in that, you know, this is going to become more and more material to the financial bottom line of a business. And they're getting out ahead and engaging with regenerative agriculture to move things forward. And then, yeah, they bump up against the, you know, the CFO or the financial part of the organization. They bump up against procurement and the buying parts of the organization that are saying, look, we've been optimizing for single bottom line, lowest cost formulation for 100 years. And we're not just going to, you know, do something different now. No, pressures are worse economically. We have to cut costs even more. So I think there are some real structural challenges. It's very rarely impassable. And every company that I've worked with and we continue to work with has found ways to move things forward. But it's small. The seeds are sprouting inside of companies, but I'm not sure they haven't even grown into a plant and gotten towards flowering inside of the company. Even if the larger global movement and excitement about it is, there's still a ways to go. Whether that's a brand, a manufacturer, or whether it's a retailer that's starting to work with it, or an ingredient supply company, like there's motion, there's movement, there's some real differences and challenges to be reconciled. And I think one of the ways to help move on the journey, or the only way that I've really been able to, is to have a community that I'm doing it with, is to have peers, is to have colleagues at organizations and companies of different scales who are working to figure out how to move things forward. And some of the bigger organizations out there, like the One Planet Business for Biodiversity, or even better, the Sustainable Markets Initiative, which is a smaller group of companies, but a very focused one. And we put out this report last year that's called Scaling Regenerative Farming, that has a set of 5 big actions that we need to take in order to continue to rapidly grow regenerative agriculture around the world. And that, you know, now as a follow-on to that, that Sustainable Markets Initiative, the Agribusiness Task Force, we have a number of different work streams, some of them around the metrics, the common metrics that we, you know, agreed to use to talk about agriculture and regenerative agriculture. How good's one of the co-leads along with the retailer of that group. But then there's another work stream that's looking at procurement and buying, and like, how do we buy and how do we need to buy differently? And then how do we collaborate both with governments, but then also with ecosystem service markets in order to have the financially economic viability for producers around the world to choose to make this shift? And so it's this kind of multi-company across a supply system, from farmers to ingredient manufacturers to brands to retailers, all the way to end consumers, and including banks and investors and insurers along the way. It's like getting those communities to be working and thinking together, like an ecosystem, is part of what will make these newly sprouting regenerative agriculture instances work as an ecosystem and get to that full age of a tree someday.
And I think, Ethan, like, you know, what you're touching on too, I think the unsaid or unspoken thing is that it's bridging and weaving work, because we're weaving together ways of doing things that created, you know, structures of wealth and capitalism and the systems that run our world with this possibility of returning back to ways of doing things that are more ecosystem based and weaving that together. And I think for a CEO of a very big company, that's a big weave, you know, to have to weave together. And I think that we're experiencing that in so many places in our world right now, that it's like, it's almost, I want to say, old and new weaving together, old ways of living, new ways of possibility, old ways of, you know, stewardship that has been going on for eons and eons, to oops, we forgot and now we got just so disconnected, but we made these other things, and how do we bring it all together? And I think that, you know, yeah, it's that, it's bridging and weaving work, and it's not something that we're very practiced in, I think, as a society.
And you could also think differently and think, okay, it's the old food manufacturing or CPG brand or food company or input company world is transitioning and maybe partly ending, and let's focus only on the new. And yet both of you do focus on transitioning the old. And we do know from transition science and in other sectors that are like every sector seems to be going through a big transition, that many won't make it, or like it's very difficult, let's say, for a large institution in general to change and to be part of the new. And we all know the examples where it didn't happen. We also know a few examples where it did happen. But why are they so important, the old in the new world?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Karen and I both work across the spectrum, right? Like, we're working with some amazing smaller, I almost said this when you asked before about inside of organizations, but we work with, you know, some small, amazing food companies, especially. I'm thinking of like White Leaf Provisions, doing a regenerative and biodynamic,
amazing food.
And they're small. And so they've just got it in the DNA from the start. They don't have to go pitch it. They don't have to pitch it to the CEO, because it's the CEO pitching it, right? It's the co-founders moving it forward together. Or even on a little bit bigger scale, you see companies like Simple Mills or Alter Eco, who like are really focusing on agroforestry, regenerative agroforestry, and they're disruptive, right? They're growing, and bigger companies are looking at them and saying, do I acquire them or how do I compete with them? And so it's not only the big ones that we work with, we have to work across the spectrum. But the image I was getting was, you know, of a big, you know, think of a big company anywhere in the global fooding system. a big company has the opportunity to be like a big old mother tree in a, you know, in an ancient forest, and that it can shelter, it can support and feed nutrients back to the little ones down below. But then also that tree could fall, and, you know, having a giant company fall, there's a way that that could happen too, so that it hits the ground, decomposes, and feeds the soil below to have the new one step up. So I think that's a really good way to say, like, why are we trying to work there? Why are we saying, well, let's see if we can help this old tree be healthy and support the whole system, because it's learned a lot and it does a lot of things well. But then also, if that tree falls, we're also nurturing, you know, what's closer to the ground that will come up to fill the space.
And it's important to work. It's important.
I was wondering if you were, you had a pause. I was wondering if you were going to add something or not. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's important to work exactly where we're at and with what we have. That is our context, right? Like, our context as a world or as a country or as a whatever space is that there are many players in the space, and we have to work with what we have. It's like, if we were a forest, we would have to work with whatever lives there and whatever grows there. And we could introduce other species in order to tend and support. It's just like that. So we can't pretend these companies don't exist. We can't pretend that the systems we have don't exist, but what are the aggregates? What are the little things that we can bring so that there's regeneration starting to happen?
And do you see differences, and we also get almost to the regenerative economy side of things, especially in ownership? Like, my hunch is always that businesses that are focused long-term are better positioned for this once they click, or once they go, or the CEO or the leadership team really gets on board with the regenerative transition. In theory, at least, it should be easier if you're not publicly traded and have to report every 3 months or less in some cases. Do you feel that as well? Like, the underlying ownership structures, if they're longer term focused, does that help in this case, or actually it just doesn't really matter?
Maybe I'll start with this one. It's an attractive hypothesis. I guess I'll say that. I can't, you know, and one easy, clear way to see this is there are a number of privately held companies in the food space. Mars is one of them. Barilla is another. And by and large, you know, those and other privately held companies, they are, in many cases, being leaderful. They are thinking forward. They are looking at it. And then as a counterpoint, you see examples of companies like Danone or Unilever, both of whom had very leaderful, you know, visionary in some ways, especially with regards to sustainability and environmental and social value, CEOs and leaders who pushed things along and then got pushed out for various reasons. And so it looks like that from that perspective, it is more attractive, but I can't quantitatively say from the data that how good Keeps on the whole global food system. And, you know, we have 2 million individual food products in our database. We have the world's largest overall product and ingredient sustainability tracker and database. And our SaaS platform is being used more and more. Kind of big consulting and accounting companies are using the data, our sort of data as a service side of things. But I can't conclusively say that if I look at the total impacts of publicly traded or privately traded, or even, I don't know, Patagonia is an incredible company and is doing some really innovative things in this regard. And yet, you know, do I look at them and definitively say that their impact has been lower or that they've done more regeneration than the others? There's case studies and examples on an anecdotal basis to point to for sure. And in terms of awareness and change that have been generated in the world, for some of them, yes, there's been a lot of motion there. But on the aggregate, are they actually pushing things farther and faster than publicly traded companies like General Mills, who have a real, you know, stake, shareholder bottom line to report to, and yet are doing incredible, very innovative things, not just in agriculture, but you know, internally with regenerative business? I don't know. I don't feel like I have a clear conclusion to that hypothesis yet.
I'd say it's early.
The jury is still out.
Yeah, it's just early still. I think, you know, we're just scratching the surface of what's possible. And it's hard to say in this moment.
I guess another thing I'd add in is, like, for whatever reason, the global corporate structure, global corporate hierarchies, as they often are, has proven to be, in the last 100 years, an extremely effective organizing structure, efficient and effective. And companies are, you know, in some cases more powerful than another way of organizing, which is a nation state, whether that be a democratic or democratic in name, or a communist or a socialist. Like, corporations, however they are structuring themselves, are being very effective in the world at doing what they set out to do, which is extract financial capital profits for their owners. And I also look at, there are some cooperatives on a small scale doing great stuff. There's some on a little bit larger scale also doing great stuff. But it seems like, and I guess part of my hypothesis, and it's a gambit, I own it as a risk and a gambit that I'm taking, is if we can work with this very effective, if not always humanizing and agency generating, but let's just say effective at getting shit done, form and structure that is prevalent in the world right now, if we can have, you know, conversations at the World Economic Forum in Davos, as happened this year, the first time ever, you know, there's a huge focus on regenerative agriculture, on nutrition, on nature and nature-based solutions, right? We had just come from the global biodiversity framework getting agreed on by most of the 160 plus countries in the world at the Montreal, coming Montreal conference that got us a new global biodiversity framework. Nature was one out of every three talks on the main stage at Davos, at the World Economic Forum this year. There was an Indigenous Peoples delegation to Davos for the first time this year. And that's both, you know, amazing, great, they were there, terrible that it's the first time it's ever happened, but also amazing that it is happening, and the CEOs and the 50 plus world leaders that were there are sort of hearing this, get there again, like Karen was saying earlier, they're getting touched by a regeneration, an ancestral way of seeing and working in relationship with the world. And if that gets in there, right, if those CXOs of whatever type, if they get it and start on this path in any fashion, they're pretty effective at doing things in the world. And that might maybe be a path to move us forward. I don't think it's the only one. I'm not 100% sure it's the best one for the world and all its people, but it's certainly one that's potent enough that I can't ignore it.
Yes, absolutely. Exactly like you said it. Because, you know, when it comes down to the humanity of it, right, it's like we're all here. The things that bind us and the things that make us connected and similar are that we need the planet and we need to eat. And so if we can get down to that granular level of it, you know, I think that everyone can care about this, you know, and that's part of where the potentiality is that, you know, you can get new brands that are thinking this way from the beginning, and you can get really, really institutionalized ones to start to think about it, you know.
And if we sit down, let's say 2 years from now, and you've updated the map, where do you hope we'll be? What do you hope we'll be discussing then? I think now it was huge growth, and there's a need to go not just more but better. And what do you hope we'll be discussing, let's say, in 2 years from now if we revisit the map?
I hope we're discussing how many companies have relationship with their farmers, and that when people are making a product that they're really caring for its whole line of being, meaning from when the seed is planted to the livelihood of the farmer, to what the product does after it's used, where does it end up? Like, that people are really starting to go down that path and really really just engaging in the relationship with their brand. all the way through.
I hope that we've seen, I hope that our predictions are low yet again, and that we continue this number of organizations, you know, using regenerative agriculture. And like we say in the paper, it's a blunt sort of assessment, but does still have meaning and is still one that I think is worth watching and tracking. So I hope that it continues to grow exponentially. I think also we're going to get a greater granularity into the map 2 years out. And part of that's going to come through collaboration. So, you know, this time around, the first time it was just little Ethan, you know, sitting late at night on his computer, got the first map out. And thank goodness I did. This next time it was not just me. It was me nested and sitting with inside of HowGood, which is a, you know, quickly growing, incredible, you know, SaaS platform data organization that's helping companies of all scales in the food system make decisions towards regeneration. So it's HowGood, but then it was HowGood in collaboration with Kiss the Ground, which grew from, you know, Karen and Ryland and a few others to a much larger and quite potent organization, putting out some of the most powerful media on regeneration and education on regeneration of anywhere in the world. And so it was an ecosystem of us working together that got to this next version. I think that ecosystem will grow also. And I think, you know, accordingly, we'll have a greater degree of granularity about the farms and the number of farms moving in this way. I think we'll understand more what's been happening on the investment side of things, which we didn't focus a lot on today, but there's a huge amount of financial capital starting to flow towards regeneration, towards nature-based solutions.
Towards is a nice word, yeah. Trying to flow.
Right. Definitely trying to flow and saying they're going to flow. And, you know, there's at least a bit of deal flow. Kuhn, you and I have seen some of that come through and some exciting stuff happening, more needed.
Very exciting stuff, yeah.
So I think, I hope we have even more detail on that. But I also would like, you know, our CEO says something, this came from one of the meetings, it was the One Planet Business for Biodiversity Coalition CEO's meeting. And, you know, we spent some time together and meeting with farmers and knowing how long it's going to take. Everybody's talking about their 2030 goals and 2030 this and, you know, just what, seven years from now. But then a lot of the farmers were saying, look, it takes, you know, 3 to 5 years to get these trees planted and then up and growing. It takes 3 to 5 years to get the soil back to health. And so if you think about it, like we've got to, it's not 7 years till 2030. Like if you subtract 5 from that, we have 2 years right now. If anything that we're going to do is going to be in effect by 2030, we have 2 years right now to push some things forward and see massive decisions and investment from companies, from governments, from markets, into and towards regeneration. So I hope in 2 years we can point to that and say it was a lot even more and faster than we hoped it would be.
Yeah.
And from your side, Karen?
No, yeah, what Ethan said. I mean, I think, yeah, like I said, for me, it is about also that once we get more granular, we can see, like I said, those relationships really building in the systems that are being built now, just to be more ecosystem-like, that we can see that.
And a final question, which is never a final question, but are you, I like to ask it lately, are you optimistic?
Optimistic?
And if so, what gives that? Yes, as we are now, I mean, you sounded optimistic, but I don't know if you are in terms of the challenges we are in, but also the potential and opportunities you see for regeneration or in general?
I couldn't do this work if I wasn't optimistic. There's no way that I could get up and do this every day if I didn't like know in my heart what's possible. You know, I didn't know, like, you know, I always tell Ethan, like, if I stare at a pregnant woman, I could weep of just how I know we are nature, and I know that we make life, and that's in our power, that's in our essence, that's who we are. We make life. And so I know that we can do this, and I am optimistic in 1,000 ways that we're that we, the potential and the possibility that exists, it's endless if we really can just tap into it. It's not far from our being, it's inside of us. And if we can just get quiet enough for a second, really, really understand that, then I think that the sky's the limit in terms of what can happen. And I'm really optimistic about that.
Thank you so much for that. Yeah. Ethan, do you want to add any of that? Because it's pretty hard to follow, I think.
Well, I don't like the dichotomy or the polarization between like optimist and pessimist. And so I did two things just there as Karen was talking. I was listening to her. I also looked up the etymology of optimism because I'm always curious like where words come from and what's the root underlying them. And what's really interesting is that in the root of optimism, it comes from the Proto-Indo-European root word, which is op, just like a O-P. And that op, it says part of the root is to work, to produce in abundance. And I think that's I definitely think that we will work and produce in abundance in the coming years towards regeneration. And I think that one of the signs that I look for of whether an individual or a company is like coming from a regenerative paradigm, which is, not whether or not they're doing a regenerative thing, right? That's an external thing, but really like, how are they thinking? How are they investing? How are they making decisions? Are they saying regeneration, but they're still coming from an extractive or a do less harm paradigm? Or are they actually sort of like seated in and sourcing from a regenerative worldview? And one of the things that I look for in that is whether an individual is focusing on problems and challenges and like what isn't going well, or whether they are looking at potential. And Karen, you've spoken this all the way through this conversation of like sourced from our context, from who we are and where we are. There's something unique about us. I have an essence. Each company has an essence. Each place has an essence that can be expressed. And if you're heading towards the potential that can come from that place, from that individual, from that company, that is more of a sure sign to me that you're thinking from regeneration, as opposed to, well, I've got to fix this problem. We've got climate change. That's a real issue. We got to get our carbon emissions down. We have to fix the problem with these supply chains not efficiently spreading regenerative agriculture enough. That's an older way of looking at it. And I think we have to be coming from a place of what is the potential of this system in front of me that I can influence, that I can touch, that I can invite to change. And if so, there's a lot that can happen. So from that perspective, huge amount of potential. There's also a lot of risk and a lot of things that can go wrong. And it's a polarized world. And I can also see us leaving the current state of stability in the world and shifting to a much more chaotic, fragmented, away from nation states and to city states, away from globalized major companies and towards a lot more localized food production. And that would be a chaotic transition with a lot of pain and challenge in it. And there'd be some interesting things that emerge from it in terms of a relocalization and resourcing from place. So I see a lot of potential, and it's going to be an interesting couple of years.
Yeah. And I think with the the possibility of even that fragmented, localized system, I think what gives me hope is that we still don't lose our essence or our context. We still have the potential of regeneration, even if that happens,
So true. And I think this is why, Karen, the video that Kiss the Ground just put out, the possibilities of regeneration, is such an important story for us all to be holding, because it touches in this beautiful visual way how humans have great potential, can be part of their place, can contribute, and have for eons. And I think each of us, seeing that and remembering that will be a good guide, regardless of what the macro path is that comes in the coming years.
Yes, I agree. It was an important story.
I will definitely link it below.
Thank you. It was an important story to tell because it talks about that empowerment, right? Like that piece where we can't just sit there and you know, feel defeated. Like, we are a people who has always, if we are in relationship with nature, has always been able to be here and have sustenance and have care and have, you know, and the, you know, we wrote it with Lila June Johnston, who's an incredible Indigenous woman and scholar. And, you know, she really wanted to tell the story in a way that where everybody who watches it remembers that empowerment of their being, like that it's within us to be able to have this relationship with nature. And it's within us to remember that so that we can keep existing.
And I think it's a perfect way to end this conversation. I want to thank you both so much for showing up here, of course, for the work you do, but also to come to this podcast and share with this community. I will link as much of this below in the show notes as possible. And of course, I hope to be checking in with an updated version of not only the map, but also where we stand in the regeneration movement in a couple of years.
Thank you. Yeah. And Ethan, thank you for staying in the conversation.
Yeehaw. Thanks, everybody.
All right.
Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. For the show notes and links we discussed in this episode, check out our website, investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/posts. If you like this episode, why not share it with a friend or give us a rating on Apple Podcasts? That really helps. Thanks again, and see you next time.